The woman is barely breathing when they carry her through the fortress gates. Her arms are locked around a child, both of them frozen, starved, and broken by whatever journey brought them here. Snow melts in her dark hair. Her lips are cracked and blue. The healers come running. The guards step back. But when they try to take the child from her arms, she fights even in unconsciousness, even when she should not have the strength to lift a finger. Her grip tightens. Her body curls protectively around the small form. Then she whispers a name. Just one name. A single word. Spoken on a breath that might be her last. And the Alpha King's face turns to stone. Everyone in this fortress knows King Caelith Vorn, ruthless conqueror, the wolf who crushed three kingdoms beneath his claws, a name used to silence rebellions and end entire bloodlines. No one defies him. No one questions him. But no one knows the name she just whispered. No one living anyway. That name died with his mother 15 years ago. Get out, the king commands. The healers hesitate. All of you. Quieter now. More dangerous. Out. Now. They flee. The king pulls a chair beside her bed, sits down, and does not move until dawn. So now the entire fortress is wondering. Why would the most feared ruler in the realm dismiss every healer and sit beside a dying stranger who whispered a dead woman's secret? Soraya had stopped feeling her feet 3 days ago. That should have worried her more than it did. She remembered something about frostbite from the old healer back home. Something about numbness being the last warning before the flesh started dying. But she couldn't hold on to the thought. It kept slipping away like water through frozen fingers. Tea was getting heavier, not actually heavier. The child weighed almost nothing, 7 years old and small for her age, all sharp bones and hollow cheeks from weeks of running. But Soraya's arms were failing, and that made everything feel like 1,000 pounds. Just a little further, Soraya whispered. She didn't know if she was talking to Tia or to herself. Just a little further, and we'll be safe. She'd been saying that for 5 days now. Tia's head lolled against Soraya's shoulder. The child hadn't spoken since yesterday morning. That was bad. Tia was a talker, a chatterer, the kind of child who asked questions about everything and filled silences with observations about clouds and shadows and the shapes of icicles. Silence from Tia meant she was conserving what little strength she had left. The road stretched ahead, white, and endless. Soraya didn't know where she was anymore. The forest had given way to open hills 2 days ago, and she'd just kept walking, following the road because the road had to lead somewhere. It had to. She thought about her father, King Aldric of Arendelle, who had knelt before the Alpha King and signed away his daughter's freedom to save his kingdom, who had looked at Soraya with tears in his eyes and said, "This is the only way." Who had promised her that the Wolf King was not as terrible as the stories claimed? Soraya had believed him. Right up until she'd found Tia. The child had been hiding in the refugee camp outside the capital, orphaned by the same war that was supposedly over, starving while the nobles feasted and celebrated the peace. No one was helping her. No one was even looking at her. That was when Soraya understood exactly what kind of peace her father had negotiated. So she'd taken Tia and run. It had seemed like a good idea at the time. Better than marrying a monster. Better than becoming the symbol of her kingdom's submission. Better than pretending everything was fine while children starved in the shadow of castle walls. Now, dying on a frozen road with a child in her arms, Soraya wasn't sure anymore. Her foot caught on something. A stone, maybe. Or nothing at all. Her body simply stopped working, the muscles giving out all at once. She went down hard, twisting at the last second to keep Tea from hitting the ground. Her shoulder took the impact. Pain lanced through her, bright and sharp, and then faded to a distant throb. She couldn't get up. She tried. She really tried. But her arms wouldn't obey, and her legs had forgotten how to work. and the cold was seeping into her chest now, making her heart beat slower and slower. "Tia," she whispered. "Sweetheart, you need to wake up." The child didn't stir. Soraya pulled her closer, curling her body around the small form as if she could somehow keep the cold out by sheer force of will. If they were going to die here, at least they would die together. At least Tia wouldn't be alone. Hoofbeats. Soraya heard them from very far away, muffled by the snow and the strange ringing in her ears. Her eyes had closed at some point. She couldn't seem to open them again. Voices now, men shouting. "Over here, there's someone on the road!" Hands on her, trying to pull her up. She fought them instinctively, her fingers locking around Tia's small body. They couldn't take her. They couldn't separate them. She'd promised. "She won't let go of the child." "Is she dead?" "Not yet. Barely breathing, though." A new voice cut through the others, deeper and colder, carrying the kind of authority that made the other voices stop immediately. "Bring them both inside." Soraya tried to open her eyes. She needed to see who was speaking. She needed to know if this was rescue or something worse. Her lids felt weighted with stones, but she forced them apart just enough to catch a glimpse. A man stood above her, tall and broad-shouldered, with eyes the color of winter sky just before a storm. Pale gray, almost silver. There were scars on his face, one cutting through his eyebrow, another along his jaw. She knew those scars. Everyone knew those scars. The whole world knew the face of the Alpha King. "No," Soraya thought. "This can't be right. I was running away from him. I can't have run straight to him." But her body was being lifted now, and she couldn't fight anymore. Couldn't do anything except hold on to T and hope that the child would survive even if she didn't. Her lips moved without her permission. A name rose up from somewhere deep and buried. A name she shouldn't know. A name she'd only heard once in a fever dream that felt more like a memory. "Kale," she breathed. And then the darkness took her completely. The last thing she felt was warmth. It didn't make sense. She should have been cold, should have felt the snow seeping through her clothes, and should have been shivering like she had been for days. But someone had wrapped something around her, something heavy and warm that smelled like pine and wood smoke, and something else she couldn't name, something safe. Her fingers relaxed slightly around Taya, and then there was nothing at all. Kaelith Vorn had been called many things in his 31 years, monster, tyrant, conqueror, the Wolf of Valmorin. He had earned every name through blood and fire and the kind of ruthless efficiency that made kingdoms kneel and enemies vanish. He had never been called patient. Yet here he sat, in a hard wooden chair beside a bed in the healer's quarters, watching a stranger breathe. The fire crackled low. Outside, the fortress had fallen into an uneasy silence, the kind that only happened when everyone was too afraid to make noise. His guards had tried to station themselves inside the room. He'd sent them away. The healers had tried to return twice, insisting that the woman needed care. He'd sent them away, too. He needed to think. The woman lay motionless beneath the heavy blankets, her dark hair spread across the pillow like spilled ink. The color had returned to her cheeks, faint pink replacing the deathly blue, and her breathing had steadied into something that sounded less like dying. The child slept beside her. Kaelith had tried to have the girl moved to a separate bed. The woman had fought even in unconsciousness, her fingers tightening around the child's small body, her face contorting with a desperation that made something twist in his chest. So he'd let them stay together. She'd whispered the name again when they'd tried to separate them. His name. His true name. The one his mother had called him before the sickness took her. Before his father had beaten the softness out of him. Before he'd become the thing the world feared. Kale. No one knew that name. He'd made certain of it. The servants who'd heard his mother use it were dead. Most of natural causes. A few by his father's hand. The records had been burned. the memories buried. And yet this woman, this half-frozen stranger who'd collapsed at his gates clutching an orphan like a lifeline, had spoken it like a prayer. Caelith leaned forward, studying her face. He knew who she was. Princess Soraya of Arendelle, eldest daughter of King Aldric, the woman he was supposed to marry in 3 weeks' time. He'd seen the portrait they'd sent, a formal painting that showed a composed young woman with dark hair and darker eyes, every inch the obedient princess. The portrait hadn't captured this, hadn't captured the stubborn set of her jaw, or the way her body curved protectively around the child even now, or the faint scars on her hands that spoke of work no princess should have done. She'd run from him. He should be furious. The alliance with Arendelle was critical, a political necessity that would solidify his hold over the southern territories. Her disappearance had caused chaos, accusations flying between kingdoms, search parties sent in every direction, and here she was, half dead at his gates, clutching an orphan child, with his name on her lips. "Your Majesty," the voice came from the doorway. Caelith didn't turn. "I told you to leave, Lord Marek." His uncle stepped into the room anyway, footsteps careful on the stone floor. Marek had been his father's closest advisor, and now he was Caelith's. The man was useful, efficient, entirely without sentiment. Caelith had never fully trusted him. "The council is asking questions," Marek said. "They want to know why you've dismissed the healers." "Tell them it's not their concern." "And the princess?" Caelith's jaw tightened. "She's not a princess right now. She's a patient." "She's your betrothed." Marek's voice dropped lower. "A betrothed who fled rather than marry you. The council will want her punished." "The council can want whatever it likes." Silence stretched between them. Caelith could feel his uncle's gaze on the back of his head, calculating, assessing. "You've been sitting here for 4 hours," Marek observed. "This is unlike you." Caelith said nothing. "The servants are talking. They say she spoke your mother's name for you." His hands curled into fists. Of course the servants were talking. Secrets didn't exist in this fortress, only varying speeds of gossip. "They're mistaken," Caelith said. "Are they?" He turned then, slowly, and fixed his uncle with a look that had made battle-hardened warriors step back. Marek, to his credit, merely raised an eyebrow. "Leave," Caelith said. "Now." Marek inclined his head, the picture of deference, but his eyes held something else, something Caelith filed away for later examination. "As you wish, Your Majesty. But might I offer one observation?" Caelith waited. "You've conquered kingdoms without flinching." Marek's lips curved slightly. "You've ordered executions without losing sleep. And yet you sit beside an unconscious woman like a lovesick boy waiting for his sweetheart to wake." A pause. "It's almost as if you care." "Get out." Marek left, the door closing softly behind him. Caelith turned back to the woman. She was still unconscious, still breathing, still holding the child. The firelight played across her features, softening the sharp edges of starvation, making her look younger than her 22 years. Why had she run? The question had been burning in him since he'd first received word of her disappearance. King Aldric had claimed she was overwhelmed, frightened of the marriage. But Caelith had read the reports, had seen the portrait, had heard the stories of a princess who spoke her mind and championed the poor. That woman wouldn't have run from fear. So what had she run from? And how in all the frozen hells did she know his name? The child stirred beside her, a soft whimper escaping. Caelith went still. But the girl didn't wake, simply burrowed deeper into the woman's side, and the woman's arm tightened around her automatically. A shadow crossed his features. He recognized that gesture, that desperate, protective curl of a body around something precious. He'd seen it once before, a long time ago, when his mother had tried to shield him from his father's fists. He stood abruptly, the chair scraping against stone. This was dangerous. He shouldn't care. He shouldn't feel anything at all. And yet, he couldn't seem to make himself leave. So he sat back down, and he waited for her to wake. Soraya woke to warmth and the smell of wood smoke. For a long moment, she simply lay there, her mind struggling to catch up with her body. Something was wrong. She should be cold. She should be lying on frozen ground with snow seeping into her clothes. Instead, she was in a bed. A real bed, with soft sheets and heavy blankets and the kind of pillows she hadn't felt since leaving home. Tea. Panic shot through her, sharp and bright, and she jerked upright, immediately regretting it when her head spun and her vision went white around the edges. Easy. The voice came from somewhere to her left. Deep. Male. Carrying the kind of quiet authority that expected obedience. Soraya turned her head slowly, blinking until her vision cleared. A man sat in a chair beside her bed. Tall, broad-shouldered, dressed in simple dark clothing that did nothing to hide the predatory stillness of his body. His eyes were the color of storm clouds, pale gray with something colder lurking beneath. Scars marked his face, one through his eyebrow, another along his jaw. Her breath stopped. "The child is fine," the man said. "She's being fed in the kitchens. My servants are looking after her." Soraya's mouth opened, but no sound came out. She knew this face. Everyone knew this face. It was painted on walls and carved into statues and used to frighten children into obedience across three kingdoms. Alpha King Caelith Vorn, the monster she'd been running from. "You," she whispered. His jaw tightened almost imperceptibly. "Me." Soraya's hands fisted in the sheets. Her heart was pounding so hard she could feel it in her throat. She needed to run. She needed to grab Tia and flee before he could stop her. She tried to swing her legs out of bed. Her body refused. Her limbs felt weighted, sluggish, disconnected from her brain's frantic commands. She managed to shift a few inches before the room tilted dangerously, and she had to grip the mattress to keep from falling. "You've been unconscious for almost 2 days," the king said. "Your body nearly died. Running is inadvisable. You can't keep me here. I can do whatever I want. I'm the king." The words were flat, matter of fact, entirely without arrogance, just a simple statement of truth. Soraya hated him for it. "Where is Tia?" she demanded. "I want to see her. Now." He studied her for a long moment, those pale eyes moving over her face with an intensity that made her skin prickle. "You ran from our engagement," he said, ignoring her question. "You fled your kingdom, your family, your duty. You nearly died on a frozen road." A pause. "All for a child who isn't even yours." She needed help. "Many children need help. You can't save them all." "I could save her." His expression remained unreadable, but something surfaced briefly in his eyes before vanishing. "The servant said you found her in the refugee camps," he said. "Starving. Alone." Soraya said nothing. "They said you'd been traveling for nearly 2 weeks, on foot, in winter, with almost no supplies." His head tilted slightly. "That's either incredibly brave or incredibly stupid. I didn't ask for your opinion." "No," he agreed. "You didn't." He stood, and Soraya flinched backward before she could stop herself. He was tall, much taller than she'd expected, and the way he moved reminded her of the wolves she'd seen in the forest, controlled, deliberate, dangerous. But he didn't approach the bed. Instead, he walked to the door and opened it. Soraya heard voices outside, a servant's murmur, and then small footsteps running. "Soraya!" Tia burst into the room like a small hurricane, her face clean and her hair brushed, and her eyes bright with something that looked almost like hope. She launched herself at the bed, scrambling up onto the mattress and throwing her arms around Soraya's neck. "You're awake. They said you'd wake up soon, but I was scared you wouldn't. And the food here is really good, and the servants are nice, and there's a lady named Bryn who let me help in the kitchens and... Soraya held her tight, burying her face in the child's hair. Tia was warm and solid and alive. They'd made it. Somehow, impossibly, they'd made it. "I'm okay," she whispered. "I'm right here." "I know." Tia pulled back, her small face serious. "The king sat with you the whole time." Soraya's gaze snapped to the doorway. Caelith stood there, watching them with an expression she couldn't decipher. When their eyes met, he didn't look away. "The whole time?" Soraya repeated. Tia nodded enthusiastically. "He didn't leave once. The servants tried to make him eat, but he said he wasn't hungry. Lady Bryn said she's never seen him do that before." Soraya stared at the king. He stared back. "Why?" she asked quietly. For a long moment he didn't answer. Then he turned toward the door, pausing at the threshold. "You whispered something," he said, "while you were unconscious." Her blood went cold. "What did I whisper?" He looked at her over his shoulder, and for just a second, the mask slipped. Something raw and old and almost wounded surfaced in those pale eyes. "That," he said softly, "is what I'm trying to figure out." He left. Soraya sat frozen, her arms still wrapped around Taya, her heart beating a rhythm that felt like fear. What had she said? And why did the most dangerous man in the realm look at her like she'd just broken something inside him? 3 days passed before Soraya could walk without the walls spinning. She spent most of that time in the room they'd given her, a chamber far too grand for a prisoner, with tall windows overlooking the mountains and a fireplace that never seemed to go out. Tia came and went freely, chattering about her adventures in the kitchens and the stables and the training yard where she'd watched soldiers practice. The king did not return. Soraya told herself she was relieved. On the fourth morning, she woke to find a dress laid across the chair beside her bed. Simple cut, warm fabric, deep green that reminded her of forest shadows. No note. No explanation. She put it on anyway. The fortress was larger than she'd expected. Darker, too. All black stone and iron fixtures, built into the side of a mountain like something that had grown there rather than been constructed. But there were windows everywhere, letting in pale winter light, and the servants she passed nodded respectfully, rather than cowering. That surprised her. She'd expected fear, oppression, the visible weight of tyranny pressing down on everyone who lived here. Instead, she found a kitchen full of warmth and laughter where Tia sat on a stool helping an older woman knead bread. She found a library with more books than she'd ever seen in one place, and a healer's wing that smelled of herbs and honey, and a great hall where servants ate alongside soldiers at long wooden tables. She found a courtyard where children played. That stopped her cold. A dozen of them, maybe more, ranging from barely walking to nearly grown. They were dressed warmly, well-fed, supervised by patient adults who didn't raise their voices or their hands. Orphans. Soraya spun. The king stood behind her, silent as a shadow despite his size. She hadn't heard him approach at all. "War orphans," he continued, his gaze moving past her to the children. "We take in as many as we can." Soraya stared at him. This didn't fit. None of this fit the stories she'd been told, the monsters she'd been promised to, the beast who crushed kingdoms and left nothing but ashes behind. "Why?" she asked. He looked at her then, those pale eyes unreadable. "Why do you care for Tia?" "That's different." "Is it?" She didn't have an answer. He turned and walked away, clearly expecting her to follow. She hesitated for a long moment, pride warring with curiosity, before her feet moved of their own accord. He led her through corridors she hadn't seen, past guards who straightened at his approach, and servants who nodded without fear. Finally, he stopped before a heavy wooden door and pushed it open. A study. Warm and cluttered. Nothing like the cold formality she'd expected. Books stacked on every surface, maps pinned to walls, a fire crackling low in the hearth. Two chairs sat before the fireplace, angled toward each other like old friends. "Sit," he said. "I'd rather stand." A hint of dry amusement tugged at the corner of his mouth. "As you wish." He sat in one of the chairs, stretching his long legs toward the fire, and gestured to a tray on the small table between them. Tea, bread, cheese, fruit. Her stomach cramped at the sight. "You haven't been eating enough," he observed. "The servants report you give half your meals to the child." "Tea needs it more than I do." "Tea is not starving. You still are." Soraya's jaw tightened. "Is this why you brought me here? To lecture me about my eating habits?" "No." He leaned back, studying her with that unsettling intensity. "I brought you here to ask you a question." "Then ask." A pause. The fire crackled. "What do you remember?" he said quietly. "About the night before you ran?" Soraya frowned. "I don't understand." "The night before you fled Arendelle. Your father held a feast to celebrate the engagement. You retired early, claiming illness." His eyes never left her face. "What happened after that?" Something stirred in her memory. Fragments, pieces that didn't quite connect. She remembered the feast, the noise, the crushing weight of her future pressing down on her chest. She remembered fleeing to her chambers and collapsing on the bed. "And then, I had a dream," she said slowly. The king went very still. "I don't remember much of it. Just warmth and a voice." She shook her head, frustrated by the fog in her mind. "Why does it matter?" He didn't answer immediately. When he spoke, his voice was different, softer, almost hesitant. "The name you whispered," he said, "when you were unconscious. Where did you hear it?" "I don't know what name you're talking about." "Kale." The word hit her like a physical blow. She knew that name. She didn't know how or why, but she knew it the way she knew her own heartbeat. Deep and instinctive and completely inexplicable. "I don't..." She pressed a hand to her temple. "I've never heard that name before." "You're lying." "I'm not." Her voice rose. "I don't understand any of this. I don't know why I know that name. Or why it matters. Or why you sat beside my bed for 2 days, instead of throwing me in a dungeon like any sensible king would do to a runaway bride." He stood abruptly. The movement was too fast, too sharp, and Soraya stepped back instinctively. But he didn't approach her. He walked to the window instead, his back rigid, his hands clasped behind him. "My mother called me that," he said finally. "Before she died. No one else ever knew." The air rushed from Soraya's lungs. That name was buried with her 15 years ago. He turned to face her, and the rawness in his expression made her chest ache. "So tell me, princess, how does a woman I've never met whisper my dead mother's secret while she's dying in my arms?" She had no answer. The silence stretched between them, heavy with questions neither of them could resolve. "I don't know," Soraya whispered. "I swear to you, I don't know." He held her gaze for a long moment. Then he nodded once, something resolving in his expression. "Then we'll find out together." 2 weeks passed. Soraya stopped counting the days after the first week. Time moved differently here, measured in meals and conversations and the slow thawing of something she hadn't realized was frozen inside her. She was not a prisoner. That had become clear almost immediately. She was free to go anywhere in the fortress, speak to anyone, do anything she wished. The king had even offered her an escort home if she wanted to leave. She hadn't taken it. She told herself it was because of Tia. The child had bloomed in this place, her hollow cheeks filling out, her laughter echoing through corridors that seemed less dark every day. She'd made friends among the orphans, found a role in the kitchens, started learning to read with one of the elderly scholars. Taking her away now would be cruel, but that wasn't the only reason Soraya stayed. She found herself watching for the king more often than she'd admit. Looking for him in the great hall during meals, listening for his voice in the corridors, noticing when he entered a room even before she saw him. He watched her too. She caught him at it constantly. Those pale eyes tracking her movements, studying her face when she spoke, lingering on her hands when she gestured. He wasn't subtle about it. If anything, he seemed to want her to notice. They talked. Not about the name, not about the mystery that hung between them. They talked about books and politics, and the best way to negotiate with stubborn nobles. They argued about strategy and debated philosophy and discovered they had almost identical opinions about poetry. She learned things about him. He hated formal dinners. He read late into the night and rose before dawn. He remembered the name of every servant in the fortress and asked after their families with genuine interest. He'd been terrified of storms as a child and still felt uneasy during thunder. He'd never had a friend. That confession came late one night, when they were both sitting in his study after everyone else had gone to bed. Tia was asleep upstairs. The fire had burned low, and the wine had loosened something in both of them. "My father believed friendship was weakness," Kaelith said, staring into the flames. "He eliminated anyone I showed affection for. Servants, tutors, even a dog once." A pause. "I learned to stop showing affection." Soraya's heart clenched. "That's monstrous," she whispered. "He was a monster." No emotion in his voice, just fact. "I killed him when I was 16. Everyone thinks it was during a hunt, a tragic accident. It wasn't." She should have been horrified. Instead, she reached across the space between their chairs and laid her hand over his. He went completely still. "He deserved it," she said quietly, "for what he did to you." His eyes met hers, and for the first time since she'd arrived, she saw something unguarded in them, something young and wounded and desperately hopeful. "You're not afraid of me," he said. "Should I be?" "Everyone else is." "I'm not everyone else." His hand turned beneath hers, his fingers interlacing with her own. The touch sent warmth spreading up her arm into her chest, making her pulse quicken. "No," he murmured, "you're not." They sat like that until the fire died. Lord Marek watched from the shadows of the upper gallery, his expression carefully blank. This was becoming a problem. The princess was supposed to be terrified, obedient, a political tool that would secure Arendelle's submission and give Marek leverage over a king who had become increasingly difficult to control. Instead, she was making him soft. Marek had spent 15 years carefully shaping Kaelith into a weapon. The isolation, the brutality, the wars that channeled his rage into something useful. The boy who'd been so desperate for affection that he would have done anything for a kind word had become a king who trusted no one. Until now. Marek descended the stairs silently, his mind working through possibilities. The princess needed to be removed. The child too, perhaps. Accidents were easy to arrange in a fortress this size. But there was another option. The name, she'd whispered. Marek had heard the servants gossiping about it, a name only the dead queen had known. A name that had made the king sit vigil for 2 days like a lovesick fool. If he could discover how the princess knew that name, he might find something far more useful than her death. He'd known Queen Alira well, after all. He'd been there when she died. Soraya woke to screaming. Not human screaming, something deeper, rawer, the kind of sound that bypassed the ears and went straight to the spine. She was out of bed before she fully understood what she was hearing, her heart pounding, and her feet carrying her toward the source, the king's chambers. Guards clustered outside the door, their faces pale and their hands on weapons that would be useless against whatever was inside. One of them saw her approaching and stepped forward. "My lady, you can't—" She pushed past him. The door was heavy, but she threw her weight against it and it gave way. The room beyond was chaos. Furniture overturned, tapestries torn, deep grooves raked into the stone floor. And in the center of it all, a wolf. Massive, black-furred. Eyes that glowed with something that wasn't quite sanity. It paced in tight circles, snarling at shadows, snapping at the air. Soraya should have run. Every instinct screamed at her to flee, to get away from this creature that could tear her apart with a single swipe of its claws. But she didn't move, because she could see it. The trembling beneath the rage, the fear beneath the fury. This wasn't a monster. This was someone trapped inside their own body, fighting something they couldn't control. "Kaelith," she said softly. The wolf's head snapped toward her. Those glowing eyes fixed on her face, and for a terrible moment, she thought she'd made a fatal mistake. Then she saw it. A flicker of recognition, dim and struggling. But there. "Kael," she whispered. The wolf went completely still. Soraya walked forward slowly, her hands raised, her heart beating so hard she could barely breathe. The wolf's chest heaved, its claws scraped against stone. But it didn't attack. She stopped an arm's length away and slowly, carefully, reached out her hand. "Come back," she said. "Please." Her palm touched warm fur. The wolf shuddered. And then the change began. Violent and painful looking, bones reshaping, muscles reforming, until a man knelt on the cold floor, naked and gasping and shaking so hard his teeth chattered. Soraya pulled off her robe and wrapped it around him without thinking. Her arms followed, holding him close, letting him shake apart against her. "It's all right," she murmured against his hair. "I'm here. You're safe." His hands fisted in the fabric of her nightgown. "How did you do that?" His voice was wrecked, barely recognizable. "No one has ever... I don't know," she admitted. "But it doesn't matter right now." She held him until the shaking stopped. She held him until dawn. Kaelith didn't leave his chambers the next day. Soraya heard from the servants that he'd locked the door and refused all visitors. She tried not to let the hurt show on her face, but Tia saw it anyway. The child's two perceptive eyes watching her with quiet concern. "Is the king sick?" Tia asked that evening. "I don't know, sweetheart." "He looked scared last night." A pause. "I heard the noises. They woke me up." Soraya's chest tightened. She hadn't realized Tia had been awake. "Sometimes people get scared," she said carefully. "Even kings." Tia considered this. "You made him not scared anymore." "I tried." "That means you're important to him." The child's logic was simple and absolute. People only let important people help them when they're scared. Soraya didn't know how to respond to that. She found him in his study that night, standing before the fire with a glass in his hand. He'd gotten dressed at some point, simple dark clothing that made him look less like a king and more like a man, a tired, wounded man. "You shouldn't be here," he said without turning. "You've been avoiding me." "Yes." "Why?" He drained the glass and set it down carefully. "Because I almost killed you last night." "You didn't." "I could have." He turned then, and she saw the devastation in his eyes. "You walked into a room with an out-of-control wolf, Soraya. I could have torn you apart before I even knew what I was doing. But you didn't." "That's not the point." "It's exactly the point." She stepped closer. "You stopped. You heard me, and you stopped. Because you said that name." His voice cracked. "And I don't understand why. I don't understand any of this." "Neither do I." They stared at each other across the firelit room. "My mother had a gift," Kaelith said finally. She could calm wolves with her voice. It was passed down through her bloodline, an ability so rare it was thought to be myth. He swallowed. "She used it on me. When my father's brutality triggered my shifts and I couldn't control them, she would sit with me and speak my name and I would come back. She inhaled sharply. No one else has ever been able to do that, he continued. No one. I've tried. Healers, witches, scholars. Nothing works. His eyes burned into hers. Until you. I don't have any gifts. I'm just... You're something, he interrupted. You're connected to me somehow. To my family. To that name. And until we figure out how, you're in danger. Danger? He looked away. My mother didn't die of illness. The words hung in the air. What do you mean? I mean she was healthy one day and dead the next. I mean the healers found nothing wrong with her body. I mean my father was the only one with her when she passed. His jaw clenched. I always suspected. But I could never prove it. Soraya felt cold spreading through her chest. You think someone killed her. I think someone killed her because of what she could do. Because she could control me when no one else could. He met her eyes again. And now you can do it too. The implications crashed over her like a wave. Lord Marek, she said slowly. His guard dropped completely for a moment. What about him? He's been watching me. I thought I was imagining it, but he's always there. In the corners of rooms. Asking servants about my movements. She wrapped her arms around herself. He looks at me like he's solving a puzzle. The king's face went terrifyingly blank. Stay in your chambers tonight, he said. Lock the door. Don't let anyone in except Tia. Caelith, promise me. She saw it then. The fear beneath the command. Not fear for himself, but fear for her. I promise, she whispered. He nodded once, sharply. I'm going to find out what he knows, Caelith said. Whatever it takes. He left without another word. Soraya stood alone in the fire-lit study, her heart racing, her mind spinning with implications she couldn't fully grasp. Someone had killed the only person who could calm the king's wolf, and now she could do it too. She was halfway back to her chambers when the hand closed over her mouth. Strong arms dragged her into a side corridor, pinning her against the cold stone wall. She thrashed, trying to scream, but the grip was too tight. Quiet! Lord Merrick's voice was soft against her ear. We need to talk, princess. She went still. Good girl! His hand eased slightly, enough for her to breathe, but not enough to scream. I have questions. You're going to answer them. Soraya's heart hammered. If you hurt me, the king will tear me apart, yes. I'm aware. Merrick sounded almost amused. But you see, I've served this family for 20 years. I know things about it that would make your pretty head spin. And I'm very curious about how a princess from Arendelle knows a name that died with Queen Alira. He released her suddenly. Soraya stumbled but kept her feet. She turned to face him, pressing her back against the wall, refusing to show fear. I don't know how I know it, she said. Liar. I'm telling the truth. Merrick studied her face, his eyes cold and calculating. Queen Alira had a sister, he said. Did you know that? Soraya froze. She was sent away before the marriage, hidden somewhere in the southern kingdoms, erased from all records. A thin smile. Ilira's father had enemies, powerful ones who would have used her sister as leverage, so they hid her, changed her name, made her disappear. But I remember. I remember everything. Her blood turned to ice. What are you saying? I'm saying, princess, that there's a reason you can do what Ilira did. A reason that name lives in your blood. He leaned closer. And I'm going to find out exactly what it is. Footsteps echoed in the corridor. Merrick stepped back, his expression smoothing into perfect servility. Think about what I've said, he murmured. We'll talk again soon. He vanished into the shadows. Soraya stood trembling in the corridor, her mind reeling with impossibilities. A sister, hidden in the southern kingdoms, the pieces clicked together with horrible clarity. Her grandmother had always refused to speak about her past. Soraya didn't sleep that night. She sat in her chambers with Tia curled against her side, the child's soft breathing the only sound in the darkness. Her mind wouldn't stop turning over Marek's words, fitting them against fragments of memory she'd never questioned before. Her grandmother had come from the north. That much Soraya knew. The old woman had arrived in Arendelle as a young bride, married to a minor lord, and had lived out her days in quiet obscurity. She'd died when Soraya was 12, taking her secrets with her. But Soraya remembered things now, the way her grandmother had sometimes slipped into a northern accent when she was tired. The lullaby she'd sung, words Soraya had never understood. The pendant she'd worn always, a silver wolf with pale gemstone eyes. The pendant Soraya's mother now kept in a locked box, never speaking of it. Dawn came slowly. Soraya extracted herself from Tia's grip and dressed quickly, her mind made up. She needed to find Caelith. She needed to tell him what Marek had said, what she suspected, what it might mean. She needed answers. The corridor outside her chambers was empty. Too empty. The guards who usually stood watch were gone, and the silence felt wrong, heavy and waiting. Soraya's instincts screamed at her to go back inside. She turned. Lord Marek stood between her and the door. "Good morning, Princess." His smile didn't reach his eyes. "I was hoping we might continue our conversation." "Where are the guards?" "Reassigned, temporarily." He stepped closer. "I have something to show you. Something I think you'll find illuminating." "I'm not going anywhere with you." "I thought you might say that." His expression shifted, something cruel sliding into place. "Which is why I took precautions." He gestured behind him. A man emerged from the shadows, a guard Soraya didn't recognize, holding something small and struggling in his arms. "Tia, no." The word ripped out of Soraya's throat. "Let her go, she's just a child." "Yes, she is." Marek's voice was pleasant, conversational. "A child you care about very much. A child who will remain unharmed as long as you cooperate." Soraya's hands shook. Her vision narrowed to Tia's terrified face, the tears streaming down her cheeks, the way she reached toward Soraya with desperate arms. "What do you want?" "I want you to come with me, quietly, without alerting anyone." He tilted his head. "Do that, and the child goes free. Refuse, and—" He let the threat hang. She had no choice. "Fine," Soraya whispered. "Just don't hurt her." Marek smiled. He took her to the old tower. It rose from the eastern corner of the fortress, abandoned for decades, its stones crumbling and its windows dark. Soraya climbed the winding stairs with Marek behind her, her heart pounding, her mind racing through possibilities. The room at the top was circular, empty except for dust and shadows. Weak light filtered through a broken window, illuminating nothing. "I've been patient," Marek said, closing the door behind them. "For 20 years I've guided this kingdom. First through his father, then through him. Every war, every conquest, every decision that mattered came from me." Soraya turned to face him. "What does that have to do with me?" "Everything." He began to pace, his movements precise. Illyra was a problem. She made Caelith soft, controllable by someone other than me. So I removed her. The confession landed like a blow. "You killed her." "I poisoned her slowly over months, then watched her die." No remorse in his voice, just satisfaction. The boy was devastated, malleable, perfect for shaping into the weapon I needed. Soraya felt sick. "But you—" He stopped pacing, fixing her with those cold eyes. "You appeared from nowhere with her gift in your blood and ruined everything. He was supposed to remain isolated, dependent on me. Instead, he looks at you like you hung the moon." "So kill me," Soraya said, her voice steadier than she felt. "That's what this is, isn't it?" "Eventually." Marek smiled. But first, I need to understand what you are. How Illyra's gift passed to you. Whether there are others I need to eliminate. He pulled a blade from his belt. This will hurt, he said. But I find pain loosens tongues remarkably well. Soraya backed away until she hit the wall. Merrick advanced. She didn't know that Taya had bitten the guard's hand the moment they disappeared up the stairs. She didn't know that the child had run through the fortress, screaming for the king. She didn't know that Caelith had shifted mid-stride, the massive black wolf tearing through corridors, following a scent he could find anywhere in the world. She only knew that the door exploded inward. Caelith came through it like a force of nature, already mid-shift, his body rippling between man and wolf. Merrick spun, the blade flashing, but he was too slow. The wolf slammed into him. They crashed across the room, snarling and struggling, and Soraya pressed herself against the wall as furniture shattered and stone cracked. Merrick was fighting back, producing a second blade from somewhere, coated in something black that made Caelith snarl with pain when it caught his shoulder. Poison, Soraya realized, the same poison that killed Illyra. Merrick managed to throw the wolf off, scrambling backward, his face bloody and his eyes wild. You can't kill me, he gasped. I know too much. The council, the treaties, the secrets. I don't care. Caelith's voice came out half growl, his body flickering between forms. You touched her. You threatened the child. You killed my mother. He lunged. Merrick raised the poisoned blade. Soraya saw it happening before it did. The angle was wrong. Caelith was too focused on the kill to see the trap. The blade was going to catch him in the throat. She didn't think. She threw herself between them. The blade caught her instead. Pain exploded through her side, hot and bright and wrong. She heard Caelith roar, heard something wet and horrible happen behind her, heard Merrick's scream cut short. Then she was falling. Strong arms caught her before she hit the ground. No. Caelith's voice was shattered, broken in ways she'd never heard. No, no, no. Soraya, look at me. She tried. Her vision was swimming, darkness creeping in at the edges. Tia, she managed. Is she? She's safe. The guards found her. She's safe. His hands pressed against her wound, warm and wet with her blood. You shouldn't have done that. Why did you do that? You were going to die. I don't care. I do. Something hot splashed onto her face. Tears, she realized dimly. He was crying. Stay awake, he commanded. That's an order. I'm your king and I'm ordering you to stay awake. She wanted to laugh, but it came out as a cough. Kale, she whispered. His breath hitched. I think I know why I know your name, she said, her voice fading. I think I've always known you. Somehow. Always. Don't talk. Save your strength. I'm glad I ran. She could barely see him now. I'm glad I ended up here. Soraya, I would have married you anyway. She breathed. Even without the alliance, even without the politics, I would have chosen you. His forehead pressed against hers. Then choose to live, he begged. Please, choose to stay with me. She wanted to. She wanted to so badly. But the darkness was too heavy, and her eyes were closing, and the last thing she heard was him screaming for the healers. Soraya drifted. She was aware of things. Distantly, voices murmuring, hands touching her gently, warmth against her side where there should have been pain, and always, always, another presence beside her, a hand holding hers, a voice speaking her name, a weight that never left the chair beside her bed. She dreamed, strange dreams, vivid and bright. A woman with dark hair and kind eyes, singing a lullaby in words Soraya somehow understood. A wolf pup stumbling through snow, lost and afraid. Two girls playing in a garden, sisters with matching smiles, before one was taken away. The dreams felt like memories, but not her memories. She's been unconscious for 3 days, someone said. A healer, maybe. The poison was neutralized, but her body needs time to recover. She'll recover. Caliph's voice, rough and certain. She has to. Your Majesty, you need to rest. You haven't slept since. I'm not leaving. Silence. At least eat something, sire. I'm not hungry. Saraya wanted to tell him to eat, to sleep, to take care of himself. But her lips wouldn't move, and her eyes wouldn't open, and all she could do was drift. She woke to sunlight. It streamed through tall windows, warm and golden, painting patterns on the wall beside her bed. For a long moment, she simply lay there, marveling at the fact that she was alive. Then she turned her head. Caliph sat in the chair beside her, slumped forward with his head resting on the edge of her mattress. Dark circles shadowed his eyes. His clothes were rumpled, unchanged for days. His hand still held hers, fingers interlaced even in sleep. He looked terrible. He looked beautiful. Saraya lifted her free hand and touched his hair. Gently, barely a brush of fingers. His eyes flew open. For a heartbeat, they just stared at each other. Then his face crumpled, all the careful control dissolving at once, and he pressed her hand to his lips with a sound that was half laugh, half sob. You're awake. You look awful. A startled laugh escaped him. You nearly died and that's what you say to me? Someone has to keep you humble. He shook his head, but he was smiling now, a real smile that transformed his whole face. I thought I'd lost you. I'm hard to lose. Clearly. He straightened, not letting go of her hand. The healer said the poison should have killed you. Your bloodline saved you. My bloodline? His expression softened. Illyria's line carries a resistance to certain toxins. It's part of the wolf calming gift. He paused. We found records in Merrick's chambers. Letters, documents. Your grandmother was Illyria's younger sister, sent away when she was 15 to protect her from their father's enemies. Saraya absorbed this slowly. So I'm... my cousin, technically. Very distant. Uncertainty passed across his features. I hope that doesn't change anything. Change anything? Between us. He looked down at their joined hands. I know we started this as an alliance, a political arrangement. But somewhere along the way, I... He stopped. Started again. I can't imagine my life without you in it. And if you want to go back to Arendelle, if you want to end the engagement, I'll let you. But I needed you to know that I... Caliph. He stopped. I already told you, she said softly. I would have chosen you. His breath hitched. I'm choosing you, she continued. Not because of alliances or politics or bloodlines. Because you sat beside my bed when I was dying. Because you take in orphans and remember servants' names and cry when you think no one's watching. She squeezed his hand. Because when I call your name, you come back to me. He moved before she finished speaking. His lips met hers gently, carefully, like she was something precious he was afraid of breaking. She pulled him closer, ignoring the fire in her side, and kissed him back, pouring everything she couldn't say into the contact. When they finally broke apart, his forehead rested against hers. I love you, he said. I should have said it before. I've loved you since you walked into a room with a wild wolf and told me to come back. I love you too. She smiled against his mouth. Even though you're terrible at taking care of yourself. I'll get better. You'd better. I'm going to need you healthy for the wedding. He pulled back, his eyes searching her face. You still want to marry me? I told you. She touched his scarred cheek. I choose you, all of you, the king and the wolf, and the man who's never had a friend. Something in him seemed to break open and rebuild all at once. Then I'll spend the rest of my life making sure you never regret it, he vowed, The door burst open. Tea flew across the room and launched herself onto the bed, barely avoiding Soraya's wounded side. "You're awake. The servants told me, but I had to see for myself, because the last time they said someone was awake, they were wrong, and I was so scared, and I brought you flowers, but they're kind of squished now because I ran really fast." Soraya wrapped her arm around the child and held on tight. "I'm here," she said. "I'm not going anywhere." Tia buried her face in Soraya's shoulder. Caliph's hand found Soraya's again, and for the first time in longer than she could remember, everything felt exactly right. 3 months later, Soraya stood at the window of the Queen's chambers, her chambers now, and watched spring arrive in the mountains. Snow still clung to the highest peaks, but the valleys below were green and growing. Flowers had appeared in the courtyard gardens. The children played outside without heavy coats for the first time since she'd arrived. So much had changed. Merrick's conspiracy had been unraveled completely. His network of spies and manipulators had been rooted out, tried, and dealt with according to law rather than the brutal efficiency of the old regime. The fortress felt different now. Lighter somehow, as if a shadow had been lifted from its stones. Caelith had changed too. The wars had ended. Not through conquest this time, but through negotiation, treaty, the slow and painstaking work of building peace. Her father had wept when they'd met again, apologizing for the alliance he'd forced her into, and she'd shocked him by thanking him instead. "You sent me exactly where I needed to be," she'd told him. He still didn't fully understand. That was all right. Some things couldn't be explained. "You're thinking very loudly." Soraya turned. Caliph stood in the doorway, dressed in simple dark clothing, his crown notably absent. He looked younger these days, softer around the edges. The weight he'd carried for so long was finally beginning to lift. "I'm thinking about how different everything is," she said. He crossed the room and wrapped his arms around her from behind, chin resting on her shoulder. "Good different or bad different?" "Good. Definitely good." They stood together in comfortable silence, watching the sun climb higher. "T has a question for you," Caliph said eventually. "Does she?" "She's been working up the courage to ask for a week. I promised I'd prepare you." Soraya smiled. "That sounds ominous." "It's not." He pressed a kiss to her temple. "She'll be here any minute. Try to act surprised." Footsteps thundered in the corridor outside, and then Tia burst through the door with her characteristic lack of subtlety. She was taller now, healthier, her cheeks round and her eyes bright. The hollow, starving child from the frozen road had transformed into someone unrecognizable. "Soraya!" She skidded to a halt, suddenly nervous. "I mean, your majesty?" "Tia, you know you don't have to call me that." "Right. Yes. I know." The child fidgeted, looking at Caliph for support. He nodded encouragingly. "I wanted to ask you something." "Go ahead." Tia took a deep breath. "When you married the king, you became queen, which means you're kind of my mother now because he adopted me, so he's my father, which makes you my mother too, right?" Soraya's throat tightened. "I suppose it does. So I was wondering," Tia's voice went very small. "Can I call you that? Mother, I mean? Not your majesty or Soraya, but actually mother?" For a moment, Soraya couldn't speak. She thought about her own mother, far away in Arendelle. She thought about the grandmother she'd never truly known, Ilira's hidden sister, who had passed down a gift through blood and bone. She thought about the child in front of her, who had lost everything and somehow still had room in her heart for hope. "Yes," Soraya whispered. "I would love that." Tia's face split into a smile so bright it could have melted the remaining snow on the mountains. She threw herself forward, and Soraya caught her, holding tight. "I have a family now," Tia said into her shoulder. "A real family." "Yes," Soraya agreed. "You do." She looked up at Caliph over the child's head. He was watching them with an expression she'd come to know well over the past months. Wonder and gratitude and fierce, protective love, all tangled together in those pale gray eyes. "So do I," he said quietly. "For the first time in my life." Soraya reached out her hand. He took it. And standing there in the spring sunlight, with her daughter in her arms and her husband's hand in hers, Soraya finally understood what she'd been running toward all along. Not away from a monster, toward a home. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this story. These stories only exist because of you. Because you listen, you comment, you share, and that means more to me than you know. I'm so grateful you're here.